Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Graham Campbell, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America, although this week it is all the issues between rural and urban Australia. And I've been here for 3 days, and I've only found one guy in Australia that speaks English, so we have him on the program again today. Graham Campbell. Boy, did I ever screw up yesterday. We went to the corner of Graham and Campbell in Kalgoorlie, Western Australia, where you live, and I didn't take a picture. Shouldn't your address be at the corner of Graham and Campbell?
Well, I was considering buying a house on the corner, but the one I bought was cheaper.
Okay, but the one you bought isn't on Graham or Campbell.
No, it's not. It's on here.
On here?
Yes, like the rabbit.
Oh, hair. Yeah. All right, well, we have just arrived back in Perth where we began, just to give you the schematics. I landed in Perth. Graham was standing at my gate, all smiles. We jumped in a vehicle. We drove to his place, which is, we did pretty well. We did, got there in 6.5 hours?
Yes, 6.5 hours, yeah.
We arrived at 10 o'clock local time in Kalgoorlie, Western Australia. Spent the entire day Monday scoping it out. Scoped it out a little bit yesterday morning. And here we are back in Perth. So you're the only guy I know to get on the air today. You're good with that?
Well, it might be a new career for me.
You should have your own show on ABC Radio right here in Australia.
Well, I think you should tell the ABC that, not me.
Actually, the guy who's in charge of rural Australia, ABC, liked one of my things I did from here yesterday.
Oh.
So I could get in touch with him, let him know. Graham Campbell should have his own radio show. And for those back at home, ABC would be the equivalent of our NPR. Public radio.
Yes, well, I'm actually not a fan of the ABC.
Rural ABC's okay.
Oh, rural ABC's all right, but the national program is very trendy left.
Trendy left?
Yep.
I still can't get over the fact that you're a liberal.
No, I'm not.
You're a member of the Liberal Party.
No, I'm not a member of the Liberal Party, but the Liberal Party is a conservative party.
I know, but you're still a liberal. You're going to eat that while we're on the air?
Yep.
Speaking of eating that, you had kangaroo last night. I've eaten kangaroo before, but I decided I wanted something with flavor. I had the ribeye, which was okay. It was just okay. How was your kangaroo?
Well, kangaroo is always a bit bland. The best kangaroo cook I've ever struck is my wife, Michelle. It must be the French influence. But it was fine. It was tender. Yeah.
What is the kangaroo per capita consumption in Australia? Do you know?
Oh, let me see. I'd say 0.9732 kilograms a year.
You don't know, in other words.
You're absolutely right.
I do know that, you know, our beef at home, our beef per capita is short of 60 pounds. It's like 58. Your Australian beef per capita annual consumption is right at 80 pounds a year.
Yeah.
You're better in beef than we are, much better in beef than we are. And I think you're better in kangaroo, too, because I've never seen anybody eat kangaroo at home.
Oh, well, that wouldn't surprise me. But the grasshoppers are bigger in Australia, too, you know.
No, I don't know that. Our grasshoppers are pretty big this year. Or kangaroo just overgrown grasshoppers.
That's right, yeah.
Are they in the same family? Because they do hop around, don't they? I've never eaten grasshopper, though. I've eaten kangaroo, not grasshopper.
Again, fairly tasteless, very bland.
Very bland, unless Michelle cooks them.
Well, she doesn't cook them, but...
She doesn't cook grasshopper?
You can get them in Thailand.
You know that the United Nations has suggested that we all start eating insects to stop global warming.
Well, global warming is a propaganda exercise. It's not a fact. But why would anyone take what the United Nations says seriously?
People do.
I know. There are a lot of foolish people in the world. As Mr. Barno, I think, said, there's a fool born every minute.
Who said that?
Barnum.
Barnum?
Barnum and Bailey, the...
the circus. Oh, okay. That's why they went to the circus.
Hmm.
Yeah, well, I'm not too happy with them right now either because they've caved against the animal rights community on the entire elephant. They're phasing the elephants out of the circus because they're tired of fighting it.
Yes, well, this animal rights movement, the reality is they don't give a damn about animals. What they care about is power.
Yeah. Is that the end of it?
Hmm?
Is that the end of your... I thought you were going to give a big dissertation on animal rights and then you just quit.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I know.
Okay.
I'm like the Barnum and Bailey circus. I'm quitting.
No, they're just quitting the elephants. All right. So part of our drive, we talked yesterday about Kalgoorlie and the gold mining influence. What we did not talk about is Western Australia is quite prominent and has a reputation for the wheat belt. We drove right through the wheat belt. Where does that lie?
Well, we drove through the eastern wheat belt. There's another wheat belt which goes north of Perth up beyond Geraldton up to up to Kalbarri, basically. But that's at least as big as the eastern wheat belt. Well, West Australia is the biggest wheat producer in Australia. We produce more wheat than anyone else.
More wheat than... Australia produces more wheat than the U.S.?
No, in Australia.
Oh, Western Australia.
I mean, Western Australia produces more than anyone else in Australia.
And due to the fact that it's winter, the wheat is up. I saw one field that was headed out today, which was way ahead of everything else. When's the harvest take place?
Would start in the north, November.
See, that's so hard for me to even get used to, and I'm used to coming here now.
Yep.
But everything starts in the south and works north. But when you forget you're south of the equator, everything starts north and works south.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's very confusing.
That's probably
why you drive on the wrong side of the road in America.
No, I'm getting kind of handy now at driving on the left side of the road as opposed to the right side of the road, and I don't know why did you do that? Why did Australia start driving on the left side of the road?
Well, we did it because the British do it.
Just call yourself Europe then.
You drive on the right-hand side.
Right.
Because Britain doesn't.
We like to do everything on the right side.
Oh, I don't know. I thought, listening to your president, I thought it was pretty leftish.
Really? You got to bring that up? I thought we decided you were going to take him. You think that we drive on the right side of the road just because at the end of the Revolutionary War we wanted to be different?
Yeah, I think that's all.
But we didn't have cars. I don't even think we had a side of the road then. We just had a horse and a buggy was going to go down the middle until you met somebody.
Well, there was a protocol for horse and buggies passing, as there was one for ships, and still is for ships passing.
What's the protocol for ships passing? I don't know about that.
It's always starboard to starboard or port to port. I think. People shouldn't take that for granted. There might be some big sea crashes.
I don't think we got a lot of captains of the ships listening to the program. That's not a problem. Oh, by the way, yesterday I didn't thank you for your service in the military.
Oh, quite a ride.
We'll take a break. Graham Campbell, my guest once again today. We're back in Perth. We'll talk a little bit about why I'm in Perth, the Western Australia Legislative Conference, and a bunch more after this.
Now, folks, for years, in fact, every day since this program began, I've been encouraging you to get more information about the innovative, technologically driven Alltech, supplying feed, nutrition to animals and now plants alike. But I want to tell you that I personally, with our own family, made a decision to go with Showrite this past winter, not knowing that in the works, Alltech was looking at purchasing Hubbard Feeds. Hubbard Feeds owns Showrite. So lo and behold, our livestock for the county fair were fed Showrite, now owned by Alltech, and I'm a believer. Here's why I'm a believer, not only in how the pigs and cattle appear, but our girls, Landry first, Lindsay second, Libby third, in the average daily gain, rate of gain contest for the cattle. Not only does it give them the shape and appearance that you want, it does it rapidly. That drives profitability, my friends. Show right. Show feeds done right. Get more information by going to the Alltech website and follow the cursor through alltech.com.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside Graham Campbell once again today, coming to you today from Perth instead of Kalgoorlie. We left Kalgoorlie, drove 6.5 hours, 560 kilometers. I'm getting this metric thing down, too. I even know now that there's 2.2 pounds in a kilo. Is that right?
Oh, that's about right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, WALGA, that's why I'm here. Western Australia Local Government Association.
Yep.
What's that about?
It's the peak body that represents local councils.
Local council being county. You don't have counties.
No. They have counties in England, but we don't follow that. America does, of course.
Nice. Yeah, I walked into that one. So this would be like town councils?
Town councils and district councils.
So what's the district?
Well, Kalgoorlie, for instance, Kalgoorlie Council runs from Kalgoorlie, get me into miles, 470 miles to the South Australian border.
So the town council, so to speak, has that wide of a governing jurisdiction?
Yeah. I mean, it's fairly meaningless because they don't do much for the outlying areas.
Well, I'm sure they don't, but they potentially could.
Yeah.
I'm still struggling with something you told me today, and it may be the first thing that we've stumbled on that we really just don't agree on, and that is the stations, and the translation for that would be the ranches, that individuals own and sell to, say, a mining company, and the mining companies buy them. Why do mining companies buy ranch stations?
Well, in the past, the mining companies, we're talking about, it's all leased land.
Mm-hmm.
Mining companies buy them basically to get rid of the people. So there's no one to interfere with their mining business.
Right.
The government is now forcing them to maintain stock on their properties, which is when you take up a pastoral lease, mm-hmm. you agree to have stock. Now, it used to be you had to have a minimum stock. Now it's a maximum stock. And that's, of course, care for the environment and the power of the Greens.
Yeah, but it all comes back to somebody attempting to manage that property that doesn't eat, sleep, and breathe that property. And that's not right.
Well, I see the point. But when you take up a pastoral lease, you know the conditions.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to answer that phone or let it go till the break?
Oh, I'll let it go to the break.
Okay. So the mining company buys it. They sell off all the stock. And is there a good number for how big one station would be? How many acres? Just ballpark?
Well, our station is 750,000 acres, but it's all open on the east, and we run a lot of cattle. They water on the station, but they feed out into Crown land. There are lots of bigger stations.
Crown land meaning land owned by the government.
Yeah, government, yeah.
Okay.
There are lots of bigger stations. We're surrounded by stations over 1 million acres, and Rawlin and Props, which is the station my younger brother actually opened up for a big South Australian company, is 5 million acres.
So if this is at home, an oil company, I'm just saying an oil company because it's typically more prevalent than a mining company, a mining or oil company buys a ranch. They don't want to deal with the cattle. They don't want to manage it. They just want to get rid of the people, like you said. But what they would do is lease that to a neighbor or whoever wanted to have the highest bid and still have them manage the property, but they don't really have any say in the property. They're just in there for the grazing period. That's not common here?
No, no. And I have no doubt that does occur in some places. They would say, we'll lease you this area, but they'd excise a bit where they're actually mining.
Right.
But if they're exploring, it's a little bit different, because a little bit more difficult, because they're drilling all over the place. Look, the problem is, if the mining company gets rid of the stock, then that property becomes a harbour for feral animals, for noxious weeds, and becomes a fire hazard, which all affect the neighbours. So I am, in fact, pleased that they are being compelled to abide by the Pastoral Act, which every other pastoralist is.
Well, it's just hard-pressed for me to understand somebody owning a piece of property without wanting to manage it to the best use.
Well, as I said, you're actually leasing it. Property, you're leasing. It's a pastoral lease.
Right.
This doesn't apply on farmland. Only applies on ranch land. You know.
Why is farmland different?
Well, farmland's held by a different title. It's either held by a freehold title or it's held by a 99-year lease title, which is pretty much as good as freehold.
So the title on pastoral land is actually different than title on the wheat belt that we saw.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Really? And so can you take pasture land and convert it into wheat if you want to?
Well, in most cases you can't, because the pastoral land is all in areas where there's insufficient rainfall. There are a few exceptions where that's not true, but most of that then gets taken up by farmland. The pastoral lease runs out, and it's taken up then by farmers.
So what happens when the seed companies in the wheat business, and we're talking wheat because that's the predominant crop, the seed companies in the wheat business have genetically modified these crops to where they need so insignificant amount of rainfall that you can plant wheat anywhere and still yield a very good crop. And yet, now you can't do that if you want to on your land because it was titled as pasture land.
If genetic engineering in America has enabled you to grow crops without rain, that's certainly a significant development.
That's where we're
headed.
And
I would like to see.
That's where we're headed. That will come. I didn't say without rain. I said with minimal amounts of rain. Probably a third of the rain that we currently get.
Well, we already grow rain on far less rainfall than you grow in America.
What does a wheat crop yield? Just typical.
3 tons a hectare would be a good crop.
Yeah, you'll have to do a little translation there. Is it 60 bushel the acre? 80 bushel the acre? We're going to have to do a calculation during the break and come up with that?
Yes, well, I think we'll need a long break.
we might need a long break. But we got to have an idea on what the yield is.
Well, I think it's 2.4 acres to a hectare, I think.
Well, we're going to have to ask Google on this one. So we'll just go to a break. We'll ask the doctor, and then we'll come back with more Rural Route. We're halfway through. Graham Gamble, my guest once again today. Tomorrow we'll be talking with WALGA, Western Australia Local Government Association. It's going to be an interesting group, I can tell already, Graham. More after this. All right, now it's time to check in on what's happening in the world of Superior Livestock. Details about the country page online, www.superiorlivestock.com. You cannot get more paper on this set of cattle. Delivery November 6th through the 10th, 60 steer calves, 475 pounds, 46 heifer calves. They are $14 back, Canyon City, Colorado. They're certified natural. They're Superior verified. They're Superior right slide. They're weight stop 25. They're VAC 34. They got everything working for them. From Friday, set of split load cattle from Kit Carson, Colorado. They're delivery in October. 40 steer calves weigh 600, 30 heifer calves, 36 heifer calves. They are $13 back. Wild Horse, Colorado, another split load, 60 steer calves, 30 heifer calves. Base weight on the steers at 590, delivery late October. Here's a load from Panguitch, Utah. 83 weaned heifer calves, weigh 600 pounds. We've got a bid on those. Those are Angus-based cattle. Morrison, Illinois. Split load, 50 weaned steer calves, 550 pounds, 45 weaned heifer calves. They are delivery the first half of October. Burns, Colorado, 152 steer calves, weighing 635, delivery the last half of November. Walden, Colorado, first half of November delivery on this 96 steer calves, weighing 500 pounds. There's a bid on them. They've almost sold, actually. Get more details about these cattle, plus what's happening in the Bighorn Classic, coming up on the web, www.superiorlivestock.com. Welcome back to Rural Route. I'm Trent Luce, alongside Graham Campbell, sitting here. 18 years, federal member of parliament. Did I say that right? Member of parliament?
Yes, yes.
And we talked about kangaroo. You think that would sell in the States?
Oh, I'm sure. Look.
You said it's
bland.
You've got
people in the States that could sell damp frog to a blind Arab. I've no doubt it could be marketed. It's zero cholesterol, so that's a health myth.
Yeah, it's a health myth, all right. Cholesterol has been long overrated by the medical community. They're now beginning to understand they screwed up.
You don't have to convince me.
There's somebody I need to convince in your family?
Yes. She who must be obeyed.
Is she not here right now?
No, she's still in Kalgoorlie.
Yeah, all right. You've been getting the same flawed diet advice from the medical community we have, haven't you?
Oh, yes.
As a general rule. Mm. Is it turning? The worm's turning at home.
Oh, yeah, it's turning here, too. It's turning here, too.
That's good. All right, you made the statement that you're producing more wheat with less rainfall than we are. Why'd you say that?
Well, in South Australia, for instance, which is also a big wheat growing state, we have Goyder's line, which is a line that indicated the limits of the 10-inch rainfall area.
Mm-hmm.
We're now growing quite a lot of wheat outside that, and we're doing the same in West Australia, and you can grow wheat quite successfully on a lot less rain, on 7 inches, if you get it at the right time.
It is all timing.
Mm.
7 inches is kind of the rainfall for this part of the country?
Oh, no. Well, in Perth here.
In Perth?
We're 24 inches, I think.
24 in Perth, and then the closer you go to Kalgoorlie...
Oh, it drops off. You've got the rain shadow effect of the Darling Ranges. But the wheat is grown... in between, generally, between 15 and 10-inch rain areas.
Speaking of medical doctors, we've also got this misnomer that after 2,000 years of eating gluten and wheat, suddenly the medical community thinks that it's the root of all evil. Do you have that same craze taking place here?
Well, I noticed that shops and products are now being labelled gluten-free, or beware, there might be gluten.
Right.
Yes, it's... It's we have exactly the same things.
Do you sense that it's affecting the wheat production?
No, I don't. I don't think it is. I don't think people take that much notice of it, tell you the truth.
Really?
Mm.
There's plenty of people in the States that are taking notice, and they think it's somehow causing everything. You know... We had, I don't need to name any names, but we've had two occurrences that happened, and one happened again today that just makes me stop and say, what's wrong with people? You were talking about how you're in a drought.
Yeah.
Not severe drought, just less than what you would expect for normal rainfall. Fair?
Yep.
And we're talking to a gentleman, and he just automatically pipes up, well, is it because of the super pit? The super pit would be the gold mine that we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
My question to you is, why is it that people, we've had droughts globally as forever, okay? So why now all of a sudden when we have a little bit of a shortage of rainfall, people want to blame genetically modified crops, they want to blame coal, they want to blame gold mining, they want to blame something. How do we get to this spot?
Well, the amount of people that believed in this concept of man-made global warming, they were overwhelming what I call the chattering class.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ironical thing is this. The Labor Party is a very strong supporter of global warming. But Labor voters aren't. And the main reason, in my view, is working people don't listen to the national broadcaster. And they don't read newspapers in detail. So they say, oh, Dad told us we had some very hot days in the weather in the past, and 1914 was a very bad drought. So they just rely on what's becoming a rare commodity, and it's common sense.
Common sense is not very common.
That's true.
But you are, in that statement, totally blaming media. I'm blaming people for not researching and thinking themselves.
Well, I think you're being unreasonable. I don't think people have done that for a very long time, if ever. The bulk of people.
Surely at one point in time we had more individual thought and rational.
Yeah, I think we did. I think we did, yeah. I think
now we think we're too busy, and so we just take the tidbits. We don't even read the article. We read the headline and think we know what the article says, and the headline might not even be related to the article.
But that happens quite often.
And in fact, this morning I spent a lot of time researching this, and, you know, right here in Australia, there's tremendous push to do more and more policy for preventing climate change. And John Christie, who's been on this very program twice, is the state climatologist for the state of Alabama. He has once again reminded people, I'm the guy out there collecting the data. I'm the one that's all around the United States and global points collecting the data and applying it. And he says, we're not seeing change like you think we're seeing change. We're not seeing change like you're being told we're seeing change. And he said, if you need any more justification, we have had, in the past 5 years, we have had fewer natural Mother Nature disasters than we have in any five-year period in recent memory. And yet everybody wants to blame this little bitty shortage of rainfall on some man-made activity.
Yes, well, I'll bet it's the same in America. But people say, oh, there's more cyclones. This is the cause of man-made global warming.
Right.
The truth is, there's less cyclones.
There is.
But that's probably due to man-made global warming.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The worst hurricane to ever hit the United States. Everybody talks about Hurricane Katrina, and we had elected officials that were talking about that was because of global warming and burning coal. And this week, our reject president actually announced that he's going to try to shut down coal-fired power plants, period, because of climate change. The worst hurricane to hit the United States was Hurricane 1901, Galveston Hurricane.
Yeah, yeah. That must have been when the world was just starting to warm up.
Apparently. Except in about the mid-70s, we had this global cooling aspect because Time magazine had on the front cover in 76, how will we deal with new colder temperatures? The Earth is cooling.
Yes.
And then 40 years later, same magazine, how will we deal with the Earth warming?
And the same people who were promoting global cooling are now promoting global warming.
Mm.
But I don't think average people in Australia really believe in it. Now, it's quite clear that the majority of the Liberal Party don't believe in it. And, you know, when Obama says he's going to shut down the coal mining industry, he can probably get away with it, because what it'll do, it'll affect low-income earners most. And they clearly don't matter to the Democrats.
All policy affects low-income earners the most. And they have the least recourse to do anything or say anything about it.
Well, that's a pretty broad statement. I can think of some policies that don't. Some welfare policies disproportionately benefit low-income people.
I don't agree. Even if it gives them more money, it does not benefit them. It affects them negatively.
Well,
because it puts them in a state of mind they don't need to work, and consequently, long-term, their own personal health and family security is at risk.
Well, I hate to tell you, I absolutely agree with that.
I thought you were disagreeing with me.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
So all policies negatively affect those that struggle the most to put bread on the table.
You see that very clearly in Australia with the Aboriginal population. Every Aboriginal in Australia gets exactly the same welfare benefits as anyone else. The fact they choose to spend it on alcohol, drugs becoming an increasing problem, is really not the government problem. Another factor in Aboriginal affairs is you find that adult Aboriginals, young males, mm-hmm. will take the pension money of pensioners by force, if necessary. So, I met so many Aboriginals who say, you owe us. And I say, matey, we don't owe you anything. You know, the truth is that if, and this was put to me by an Aboriginal. He said to me, the truth is this, he said, when you fellas came here, there was a vast empty land, just a few of us running around. He said, if you hadn't come, and he named about a dozen other people that would have come, some which I thought was pretty much of a long slot, a long shot. I didn't really see any threat from Lithuania.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly someone would have come to Australia. He says, big empty land, someone's going to come here. And by and large, you lot are better than them. And you've only got to look around the world to see that. Now, that was from an Aboriginal elder, initiated man. So I think that you do Aboriginals no service whatsoever when you pander to them.
And there is no difference between the American Indians and the Aboriginals. That's my observation. In fact, the first time I drove through an Aboriginal community, I thought I was on an Indian reservation, which I lived on, Graham, for 5 years. We'll take a break. We've got one more segment of Rural Route with Graham Campbell from Perth, Western Australia after this. Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce, coming to you today from Perth, Western Australia. Graham Campbell sitting across the table from me. If we're going to pitch Rural ABC Australia for the Graham Campbell Hour, we need to have a name for the show. What are we going to call it?
Oh.
Cobbled Up with Campbell.
I thought, being conservative, I thought the Graham Campbell Hour sounds very good.
All right. Well, this is going to be, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say this is going to be your last time to be on a roll route for a while, maybe till you come back to Nebraska. So in this segment, you decide. What do you want to talk about? Because I'm not going to have you on again tomorrow.
Well, I'm happy to talk about the weather.
We talked about the weather. We can't change it. We just got to react.
Look, I think the mining industry and the resource industry and agriculture, they are both primary industries. Mm-hmm. And I think they ought to be working together, not opposing each other. But what's happening in this country, and I suspect it'll be the same in America.
It is.
The Greens are getting into the agricultural sector and getting them to campaign about things like fracking. Well, I see it this way. If you own a property and you can get a good deal for someone to put down a drill hole and frack, if you ban fracking, that's attacking your property rights. Now, I've done a lot of drilling, and I think that fracking is safe. The way around this, in my view, would be to say, if the government gives you a license to frack, the government would then be responsible if any damage occurs. And they would probably accept that because they know it's very unlikely to be any damage.
Right.
But it's not, that's just one area. There's so many areas. Now, the RSPCA in this country, everyone loves the RSPCA because they look after animals, and that's warm and cuddly. But, in fact, while there are some elements of the RSPCA clearly do, a lot of the others, they are basically Greens, and they are interested in the money and the power. Now, I'll bet it's the same as you've got in the United States, which you'd have an equivalent.
We do. We don't have a real clear equivalent because our SPCA actually has some shelters.
Mm.
They have local shelters. We have the umbrella group, the Humane Society of the United States, which would be most like them, but they only spend a half of 1% of their income, which is $160 million a year, on animals, and they don't have a shelter. So then we have local humane societies all across the country that most people erroneously believe are connected to the umbrella organization, which there's no connection whatsoever. So even though we have something very similar, we don't have exactly what you have in the RSPCA.
Well,
because we have local shelters that are out there trying to do good work. They typically don't get involved in any policy. They just want to take care of the animals that need help. And what do you think their number one challenge is? Funding.
Mm.
Meanwhile, HSUS collects money from people who think they're helping that local shelter, and none of it goes back to the local shelter. So that's the difference.
Yes, well, we have those same shelters in Australia, people at a local level trying to do the right thing.
Right.
And I don't mind donating to them, but the RSPCA will never get a cent out of me.
No, absolutely. As they should not. Oh, you know one thing we haven't talked about is just right down the shoreline here, Fremantle.
Oh, yeah.
Live exports. We have not talked about the importance of live exporting animals from Australia to other countries.
Well, if we stop it, the price of hamburgers will certainly go up in America. I've actually been involved in the live export trade. And the handling of the animals is extremely humane. There are occasional mess-ups. Ventilation on a ship might break down, and animals could be lost because of that. But generally, the survival rate is very, very high. And domestic abattoirs would have roughly the same attrition rate.
Mm-hmm.
But see, once the Greens have shut down export, they'll then turn their attention to shutting down domestic abattoirs. Of course, their agenda is to stop people eating meat.
Yeah, absolutely. But the I had the numbers in my head and I lost them. From a cattle standpoint, it's like 80% of the cattle are shipped live to other countries. 20% are fed in feedlots and go through your system here. Do those numbers sound right?
That'd be round about right. I was surprised it's as much as 80%. I thought it'd be a bit less than that. Mind you, we actually sell a lot of sheep to places like Indonesia, where they go into feedlots.
Mm-hmm. Sheep and cattle.
Yes, but mainly cattle in that particular market.
Right.
I've seen some of the animal rights television coverage, and when you know a little about the industry, you can see that it's quite clearly fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
It's cobbled together. Now, if you've got a video camera, you can make the most benign situation look bad.
Absolutely.
And that's what they do. And they, you know, the fact is, the Greens lie. They simply lie. And the community at large has got to recognise that. I can't think of anything the Greens have ever done for the environment. And I've asked them, what have you ever done for the environment? Because I haven't been involved in quite a few environmental issues. They're interested in pursuit of power.
And I think too many times we think they fool the masses, when in fact I don't think the masses care. The average person walking the street tonight in Perth, we could walk and ask them any question about the environment, about animal rights, and most of them are going to be just oblivious to any of it. They don't care.
Yes, but they can convince the politicians. So that's all they have to do, convince the politicians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their end is achieved. Doesn't matter what the people think.
And that's exactly where we're at today with food companies saying that they're only going to use, you know, there's one fast food restaurant I've seen here, and every picture I've taken, I make sure that those arches aren't in my pictures because I don't want to give them any credit whatsoever, because they're out now telling their customers, we're going to tell the farmer how to become sustainable so we can serve sustainable beef in our restaurants. Nobody tells the farmer how to be sustainable. The farmer has defined what sustainability truly is. And now we have all of these restaurants and food service, and Coles, great example right here in Australia, a restaurant or a grocery store chain that thinks they're going to tell the farmer how to do things to be sustainable.
Yes. And what does sustainable actually mean? It's one of those buzz phrases like genetic diversity. And we're here again. What we need is a common sense pill.
Shouldn't you be working on that instead of doing this show with me?
Tomorrow.
You actually had the greatest line in response to promoting biodiversity on the way up here.
Did I?
Over here. You don't remember it?
No. Senility's a problem.
Yeah. Well, that happens when you've been around 80-some years, huh?
Mm.
You said that anybody who talks about promoting biodiversity, you just ask them, if should we keep smallpox around just so some people have it to promote a little biodiversity?
Yes.
Should we keep cancer around just so that some people have it to promote a little biodiversity? You know, the other part of that is that I've often asked people, they tell me that organic is always better. Well, E. coli 015787 is organic. Do you want some of that?
That's a good point, but of course, organic is simply a gimmick.
Oh, 100%. There's a reason Grandpa left organic in the 50s, because there was a better way.
Yeah, that's right. I can remember it. Its situation's improved a bit, but probably a decade ago, you could always tell the organic fruit in the shops because it usually had scale on it or some other sign of disease.
And then they want to buy it because it had a little bitty blemish. All right, Graham, this is the one-minute warning. 1 minute left.
Right.
What's your profound wisdom of the day?
Oh, well, it'll take me more than a minute to think of that, actually.
Well, you don't have more than a minute. This is your life.
Well, I'm not going to bother about that, but I must say it's been great to have you here. I certainly hope you've enjoyed it. I hope that you now agree with me that Calgary is the center of the world.
It took me 45 hours to get there. It can't be the center of the world. But I will give you this. It's a pleasant place to visit, and I will come back. And I've obviously had a great time. So thanks a million. Yeah,
just on the mathematics of that, if it took you 45 hours to get here, which it did, it would take you 45 hours to get back. Therefore, it's clearly in the middle.
On that note, I am saying you better answer your phone. Somebody wants you bad. We've successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Both Graham Campbell and myself remind you that all roads do lead to a rollout.
Right off the bat today, folks, I want to remind you about Neo 40. If you go to the website like I've just done, neo40.com, click on what exactly is nitric oxide. Well, believe it or not, back in 1992, nitric oxide was named the molecule of the year by the American scientific community. Then in 1998, the discovery of nitric oxide as a critical signaling molecule was awarded the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. So here's my question. If we've known about the importance of this molecule for so long, why has it taken that long for the general public to truly grasp the importance of nitric oxide and what we must do to maintain the absolute optimum level of nitric oxide? It doesn't matter why you didn't know. You do now. So take the Neo 40 supplement like I do, and everything will be better. You'll think so much more clearly. Blood flow will go. That almost rhymes. Neo40.com. Put Trent in the coupon code, and you pay no shipping. Actually, it did rhyme.